We're in a city of angels. I'm Barrett Golding. This is Hearing Voices from NPR. This next hour, stories from Southern California. Starting with Tom Russell and his amazing Hot Walker project. It's an Americana ode to old L.A., the music, the culture, beat outsiders, religious revivals, and L.A. poet Charles Bukowski.
I was born in the City of Angels in the late 1940s, down on Hope Street, near Pershing Square and Clifton's Cafeteria and the Pantry, and all them old strip joints on 5th and Main. You know, tonight, White Fury and her twin 44s, Charles Bukowski territory, beat outsider America in the music that's been lost from that time, taken off the radios. You had to have been there. The backdrop is MacArthur Park and Hollywood Court apartments and racetracks. The old America when music still resonated through nightclubs. People gambled and drank and screwed and smoked. People went down to the border and sipped highballs and cocktails and went to the bullfights. The old America where the big guilt and political correctness and the chain stores hadn't sunk in so deep. I thought, you know, the best person to read these memories would have been little Jack Horton. He was a circus midget who actually used to drink with Bukowski back in the 1950s. Then I find out little Jack Horton's still alive and living in Gidtown, Florida, with all the old-time carnies and circus people. So why the hell do we need any fake Hollywood tough guys here? Here today, gone tomorrow, boys in masks, flim-flammers, magazine faces, we don't need them. Little Jack Horton was the king of the carnival, the voice of the great American Midway. A voice that sounds like Ukulele Ike on Laughing Gas, the real thing. He's been shot out of cannons. He did the pass of death on a Shetland pony. He rode the four walls of eternity on a motorcycle. Appeared in movies like The Terror of Tiny Town, One-Eyed Jacks with Marlon Brando. And he wrote poetry. This is a true American voice from the sawdust backlots of the old world. I saw little Jack a little while ago, gave him some cassette tapes and a cheap cassette recorder, and asked him to read some of these pages on Charles Bukowski memories. Real low fidelity Americana, the way it used to be. Ladies and gentlemen, it's matinee time. Here's little Jack Horton.
This is little Jack again. That was me doing the funhouse laugh there. They would record me, or sometimes I'd do it live. And they'd lower it, slow it down, or you know, and the women would go in and the air whistle would blow up their skirts and you'd see their cotton panties. Man. Well, one day, I got lushed up and I was shooting crank and Chuck Bukowski had given me a poetry book of American poets. And I came out of that funhouse. Now, I used to say, you know, on the midway, I'd say, "Hey, Freddie, bring out the armless boy." Or, "Hey, Freddie, bring out the tattooed man." Or B.J. Reed, the geek who eats chickens, you know. Well, this time when I was lushed up and I'd been reading that poetry and trying to make sense of it, I'd say, as a joke, I said, "Hey, Freddie, bring out Charles Bukowski." Here's Charles Bukowski himself, in the flesh.
If you've noticed, everything is calculated. When I finish the last poem, the last drink will arrive at the same time. Let's work out. On the hustle. I suppose one of the worst times was when, after a drunken reading and an all-night party, I'd promised to appear at an 11 o'clock English class. And there they sat, nicely dressed, terribly young, awfully comfortable. I only wanted to sleep, and I kept the wastebasket close in case I puked. I think I was in the state of Nebraska or Illinois or Ohio. No more of this, I thought. I'll go back to the factories if they'll have me.
Somewhere in that time range, a West Coast jazz thing started coming down. Very removed from New York and the East. You know, some flew east, some flew west, some blew over the cuckoo's nest. In the West, it came out of the beat cafes in Venice Beach. Or Hermosa Beach, the lighthouse. We used to hear Mongo Santa Maria. We're up in San Francisco, you know, a lot of clubs there, and City Lights was publishing all that beat poetry. Astonishing Howl by Allen Ginsberg. I've seen the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness and all that. In L.A., it was middle-class white jazz kids like Art Pepper, Chet Baker, hanging out in Watts, picking up on the black vibe. In the shadows of Simon Rodia's Watts Towers, discovering all that black jazz and heroin. Blowing with the West Coast cool. Copying a James Dean look and a James Dean attitude. And while James Dean himself drives head-on into Donald Turnip speed out near Shalom, California, blows up. He drove right into Steinbeck's East of Eden. Meanwhile, Charles Bukowski is struggling along in a worn-out Hollywood apartment motel court, hammering out blue-collar poetry, fueled by alcohol and jazz and classical music on the old tube radio. Smoggy old L.A. Bukowski, German-American but never part of any scene. Isolate, loner, crank. German kid with acne scars who never assimilated into America. An authentic voice, uncorrupted by academic stipends, Pulitzer Prizes, or political or spiritual correctness. An American poet.
Thank you.
Jack Horton here. Did you miss me? Tom was talking about all that slow-moving heroin jazz. That South Central sound. Well, what about gospel? West Coast-style gospel, you know? Let me tell you a little story. In 1951, they used to have what they called the Great Hollywood Parking Lot Weekend Revival. Swap meets for Jesus, really. They put up two big old worn-out carny tents at either end of a giant park lot, see? Like one time they might use Hollywood Park, another time Griffith Park, Santa Anita, Fairgrounds, something like this. One tent was for the Negro races, blacks of all kinds, really. The other end was for the white people, you know? And they'd set them up and the choirs would go in there and the preachers would start, "Holy God, let the music begin. Begin the goddamn Jesus begin," I tell you. The choirs would start screaming and the holy rollers would start rolling on the ground, and it was black gospel, wailing on one end of heaven and white on the other, and the whites really didn't have a chance because the blacks were really full with the blood of the Redeemer and their music was really top notch. Whites couldn't cut it. So they began to resort to tricks, you know, the West Coast fanatical tradition of white people going back all the way to people like Amy Semple McPherson and such. Hucksters, con men, religious grifters, scammers, flim-flammers, all the same. It's a carnival, it's just a religious carnival, really. Most of these evangelists and singers were really people who sold Fuller brushes to housewives during the week or Helms donuts or something like that. The whites could not compete with that black music out in those parking lots. Both tents were run by the same group of religious people, just watching the musics compete. So to compete really against the blacks, whites started using carnival stunts, like Amy Semple McPherson having herself kidnapped. And one day they brought in an elephant with an evangelist preaching on top, and then blacks at the other end of the parking lot were laughing their asses off because they didn't need tricks, they had the music. Well, 1951, the whites start pulling this stunt called World's Smallest Voice of God. A little person, a guy I know named Fred, or Roy Weller was his name, Roy Weller. And I'd known him from the circus. Well, Roy was the world's smallest voice of God, but he had some problems, of course, with booze and running off with white sisters. Ran off with a normal-sized white woman to Tijuana and never came back. Well, he was doing well at the carnival, so they hired me to impersonate him. They figured one little guy looked the same as another little guy, which of course is prejudice up, you know, right up the butt. Anyway, they made me memorize a goddamn speech of Roy's, and I had to wear these little gospel robes, choir robes really. And they had a few shills and cripples out there I was supposed to heal, roll on the ground, and Roy's gospel suit smelled like wine because he was a bad wino. I got sick and drunk, and I read the speech, but I went off my head. I was just 16 or 70. But I told them their black god at the other end of the parking lot was better than their white god because the music was better. Well, the rednecks wanted to lynch me with a little rope. To hear that coming from a little person, man, I'll tell you, I know what prejudice is like. God damn it. They were chasing me around that tent. I was saying, their god's better than your god, brother. And that's the trouble with the whole goddamn world, really, I think, is this my god is better than your god routine that we put on each other, you know? Middle East, Pakistan, Bosnia, Islam, Korans, Bibles, Jews, Catholics. My God is better than your God. That's a bunch of bullshit, really, in the end. I saw it over there in the swap meet parking lots of Jesus, I'll tell you that. And I've had this goddamn persecution against little people, too. I know what it's like to feel inferior. So people pick up weapons, goddammit. No politician's ever going to solve this shit. The tribes of God fighting each other. Wow, whoa, nanny. Little Jack Horton, people hate each other, brother. That's it. Religion is a disease and a weapon. But oh man, that black music wailing out of those parking lots. Enough, this is Little Jack here with the gospel of the swap meet Jesus.
Little Jack Horton off Tom Russell's Hot Walker album. You are hearing voices in the City of Angels. Since we're kind of dark, we might as well stay dark. Here's Joe Frank, Man on the Street.
Basically, time is just a dimension of the universe. It doesn't flow backwards or forwards like people seem to think it does. It just exists. It's basically just there. That's what music is about. It's about timing. You know, because there's sounds going around you all the time, all day long, all night long, you know. There's always sounds. You're always perceiving sounds, but they're not always organized into time units. That's what music is. They're organized time units. But they're basically the same kind of sounds that you hear all around the world, only they're put together in one tiny little area, like on the neck of a guitar or on a keyboard or in a drum. and they're expressed in certain bits at certain times to have a specific effect. You know, they're that's why they're called instruments. They're like a doctor's instruments. You know, they're basically musicians are the doctors of the sound world. They can be soldiers too. You know, there are those that use music to kill people and to harm them. Because when you hear sounds, when you perceive sounds with your ears, it affects your entire central nervous system and thereby the physiological functioning of your body. And that's why a lot of people are dyslexic from the time they're babies, because they're always interrupted. You know, everything that they say is interrupted with 10 or 15 other people putting little tiny bits and pieces of what they want to say into it, because they don't agree with what the people are saying, so they try to cut it off and change it into what they want said. You know, that's what destroys people. You know, because they think that sounds only affect the ears. They think that they only affect the eardrums, right? You know, but they affect your entire body, you know. There are people that have such abrasive voices on this planet that their entire existence, the sounds that they make are all weaponry. Every sound that their body makes is a killing sound. Everything that they say kills. Like that guy's slicing off my entire left arm right now with the way he's looking at me. People don't believe that stuff. You know, we all feel it, but we don't do anything to the people that are doing it to us. That's the problem. And, you know, when I came out to California, people started making fun of me because I didn't drive a Beamer. And now I'm a stinky homeless person that eats out of trash cans. So that means they get to try out all their theories on me. So, you know, that's why I love California so much. Everything's surface, you know, it's all polished up and bright and shiny on the outside. And most of it's poisoned and stagnant and cancerous on the inside. That's why I don't go in these buildings, and I hardly ever do business with these people. I'm not saying that everyone in Los Angeles is like that. I had this dream one time, and in this dream, America was this big dog, right? And Los Angeles represented a big tick on the dog. I don't know which part of the dog it was on, but the gist of the dream was that the tick was so full of the blood of the dog that it was sucking the blood from, because there's only one, that the blood was becoming stagnant and the tick was about to explode. You know, because the energy that's coming from Los Angeles, it's like somebody that's taken so many drugs that they know they're gonna die, but they don't want to. This city, Los Angeles, is a living creature. It's a real living creature, see? And the tick that's killing it won't let go. It's about ready to explode. And as soon as it explodes, the blood of the city is going to spew all over the planet. Because the head of the tick will still be there. And there'll be an open vein, an open pipe, and the blood of the city itself will begin spewing all over the world. Yeah. That's why I'm trying to stop it, because it's real. Because if this tick explodes, there's going to be a whole bunch of little scary monsters running around all over the planet. And we won't be able to get rid of them. Geneticists and computer scientists are really working together towards a better future for everyone, you know, because, you know, there's these clones that have perfect bodies, but there's nothing in their minds, right? And there's these computer geniuses nowadays that have this idea of implanting a silicone chip on a person's medulla and recording all of the experiences, the sensory experiences of that person throughout their life. From their medulla, from their central nervous system, onto the computer chip, and implanting it in a perfectly shaped clone that doesn't have anything in its mind, and erasing the bad parts of that person's life, and activating this clone with the person's personality and their experiences already inside. So it's basically the same person in another body. That's their version of heaven on earth. But there's a lot of people that want to kill them because they think that's unnatural. And there's a lot of people that are disturbing some real sensitive experiments and instruments just because they don't want it to happen. Thank you. way, garbage. Because it's got everyone's energy in it. You know, we're all here together, but we all want to live in our little stinkholes and keep them neighbors away from me. That's why these people hurt so bad, because they're separationists. They're separating themselves from everyone else on the entire planet. That's why their garbage is festering and stinking, because no one uses it. Basically, it turns into a giant cancerous, disgusting, pervertedly stagnant organism. And they don't realize that because they want to look good, looking strong, feeling good, looking tall, you know. They believe that heaven is someplace way out in outer space, another planet that some guy named God lives on, you know. They have this disgusting patriarchal religion that kills people. You know, I got the word from outer space that I'm the self-proclaimed king of the universe, but that's me saying that, not them. Yeah, that's me doing that. See, these people here, I'm defaming their character just by being here. That's why they're standing here looking at us, you know, because they don't believe in that kind of stuff. They're just waiting for the light to change. And these are the last days for this planet. Remember I told you time is just a dimension? It's really just a dimension. It's a place to go. That's why people that play drums are so spaced out. Because they're time creatures. They eat time. They live off of time. When their time is taken away from them, it kills them. They're being starved. Jesus has only been here for 2,000 years, right? And long, long before he ever came along, Jurassic Park was here. The Buddha, he was an Indian prince. He's not from Japan. Jesus is not from Ness City, Kansas. They're stealing everything.
That's Man on the Street from Joe Frank's Hour Streetwise. Coming up, East LA Senior Centers and a Watts High School. That's when we're back in the City of Angels on Hearing Voices.
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
I was born in Los Angeles.
I was born here. I was born where Dodger Stadium is.
I'm born in the United States.
I was born in Mexico.
I was born in East LA, Boyle Heights.
I grew up in Austria.
In Mexico City.
Oh.
In Mexico City, yes.
My father was born in Arizona. My grandfather was born in New Mexico. My great-grandfather was born in New Mexico. My great-great-great-father was born in Texas. When it was still Mexico.
I've been here in East LA all my life, and I love it.
You are hearing voices in the City of Angels. David Greenberger went to senior centers in Los Angeles and talked to the residents there. He put out a radio show called Growing Old in East LA, with original music by Luis Perez and David Hidalgo of Los Lobos.
Even though I was born in Mexico, but I came when I was about 1 year old. So I didn't know nothing about their culture, nothing at all. Over there, you have to work for everything that you want to be. We don't appreciate the United States, and they give us everything.
You know, we love our Hispanic background, and we respect it, we also love the United States because this is the only country that we really know.
It isn't that I'm ashamed. I'm not. But I'm an American first. I was born here. I was reared here. I was educated here, married here, and I plan to die here.
I don't go no more to Mexico. Since I came here, I don't go back to Mexico because I don't have nothing to do there. For me, it's here, L.A. Nowhere else. I have nothing to do in Mexico because my life, I remember when I was young, miserable. No. Forget about that. Here, 100% more, better.
I only went to Mexico one time. I don't feel a connection with Mexico, even though I love what they do. They're very beautiful people that know how to do a lot of things, especially they knew the how to make colors, they knew how to make medicines, they knew a lot of culture, they were involved in all these things that nobody else knew. You know what? When I went over there, I went to the pyramids, I saw some of their work. I mean, they're fantastic people. Everything is beautiful.
I like Mexican America. I'll tell you why. I do not want to be confused with Bolivian Americans or Guatemala Americans or El Salvador Americans, you know? And I ask people right away, you know, where are your parents from? I'd like to know. I'm not going to make any difference, but it makes a difference to Eddie Ramirez. I just do that. Remember that we, as Mexican, we prefer Mexican America.
I used to like Mexican movies. I used to know all the movie stars from Mexico because I like movies, and I knew the movie stars from the Americas, but I also like the movies from Mexico. It was part of my culture. I felt very strong. When I used to see the Mexican flag in the movies, I felt like a patriot. Yeah.
In the 60s, that's when we had the Chicano movement. I belonged to the Brown Berets then, the Chicano movement, and it started here at Lincoln High School with David Sanchez. I think it was David Sanchez who started it. That's when the Chicanos, instead of being called Mexican Americans, we were called, that's when we started that Chicano word. Because I don't like to be called Hispanic, because to me, Hispanic is from Central and the Caribbean Islands. So whenever it says race, I put white, yeah. I just put Mexican American or white. But I don't put Hispanic or Latino.
The last thing they taught me before I went to get my driver's license, they taught us the four races. It was real easy, black and white, red and yellow. Franklin Roosevelt in 1932 made an announcement that Mexican Americans were part of the white race, and I never forgot that in his address, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I went there, it says race, and I put white, and the guy taking my application crossed out white and wrote M-E-X, abbreviation for Mexican.
Right.
It wasn't asking for my heritage or anything like that. I told him, sir, I just got through studying. There's only four races, and I told him, black and white, red and yellow. So I'm white, so please put back white, and he did.
My family is from New Mexico and California. My family's been here since California started.
Oh, okay. So back
they were some of the people that came with, you know, the pobladores.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, my family. Uh-huh. My great grandmothers. And every time my mom was going to give birth, she went to Mexico to have us, three of us. That was their way at that time. They wanted us to be born in Mexico, you know, to please grandmothers, yeah. But then later in life, we found out we should have been born here. But this is my way of thinking. I respect everybody's way of thinking, but to me, if I want to go back and end my days in Mexico. I love the United States. It's my home. But to me, I still want to end my days in Mexico. Mexico is like it's calling me to. Don't know why. I just want to go in my days over there.
I was brought up during the Depression and all that. You live from day to day, just hoping the hell you had a better day, and things work out for me.
One of my girls used to tell me, "Mother, how was Depression to you?" "Fine. We didn't suffer. I mean, we were poor to the begin with, but we always had chickens, rabbits, and whatever my mother used to give to the ones that didn't have anything like that. So we didn't suffer, but we always had something to eat and to give. You need unity, togetherness, and all together you can do something about it. But if you go one way and the other one goes the other way, forget it." My mother and father were very strong.
It was really good. We're growing up in L.A. I don't know, we're considered maybe poverty or poor because we were in the Depression. I used to swim in the L.A. River. I used to have sand there. It's like a kind of like a beach. One of the last to swim there, we couldn't leave our clothes because they'd come and steal them. So then you had to send somebody home to come and bring you some clothes.
All right.
I used to play ball. We used to be called the Dodgerettes, and I had my team. Whoa. And I used to umpire CYO League and Public Grounds League. Those were the good memory days for me. I used to be out there and then ball keeping score for the umpire and all that kind of thing. I like that. We picked the name Dodgerettes for ourselves, you know. There was one team called the Bunnies, and I forget the other two teams. But we went and defeated three times. I sure miss it. I miss it so much. I used to play shortstop and pitch. That was my position. We used to have playoff games and tournaments and stuff like that. And oh, those were real enjoyable days. I really enjoyed that.
We had a beautiful childhood. My mother and my father always provide for us. My mom used to cook. My dad used to cook. My mother was a seamstress. We went to school. They thought that we had money because we always dressed real nice. Everything matched. Our little socks, our little shoes, everything was beautiful. My brothers and sisters were all very good. We used to say the rosary every night. And my mother used to bless our beds every night before she went to bed. I had beautiful childhood. Even though my mom and my dad went probably through a lot to have all of us content.
In the morning Sunday, we used to go to the early mass, 7 o'clock. We would be up early and go to church and then come back and have breakfast and everything. But we were simple. We weren't a crazy family. Now we are.
Okay, we ready. Come on, let's go. We're getting ready to go out here now. School's finna get ready and let out. Hey, how you doing? You all right? Okay. Open that gate a little bit. Open that gate a little bit. We in Watch, California, as I like to call it. My name is Pastor Michael Cummings. I'm here at Jordan High School. We do a safe passage program for the kids to be able to walk home safely.
Someone took my bed yesterday.
We're going to step across the street to the left here. This is the Jordan Down Project House, the home of the Grape Street Watch. This is where that gang is out of right here. So a lot of them is out. We're just watching now. We're just looking. What I'm saying right now is that we have our kids that's walking westbound on the 103rd. We have a couple of gang members that's out at the gates here at the Jordan Downs. Nothing is not out of the ordinary right now. Hold on 1 minute. Come here, young man. These are some of our students that joined high school. How do you feel about walking home from school? Do you feel safe?
To some extent, yeah. But I don't know, it's like it's unsafe. You don't know where anybody's coming from.
What'd you say? How do you feel about
walking home? I started to come to Jordan 4 years ago, man.
Yeah.
It's showing a little bit of proof, you know? I remember we used to get shot at all the time over here. So, you know, it's crazy.
Thanks, man. All right. Thank you. Most of the kids have to walk by the projects to get home. A lot of kids are scared of different gangs that's out on 103rd and scared of getting caught up in drive-by shootings. Right now is the time where all the kids are getting out. So it seems like it's a magnet that draws them out to the gate on 103rd. Well, they're coming out to see who's in their neighborhood, who's walking from school, that's from different neighborhoods. It's like they're coming out to protect their hood.
How we look down there?
Oh, we got a code 4 down here today. It's code 4.
10-4.
If we do have a problem, the school police will send me back up. That way we can get the kids off to what they need to do. We're going to go down to Carocious, kind of hot corner that I picked out. It's our Southsiders here. Southside Grape is the Spanish gangs down here. We're just hanging out. Now just think if you had a couple of gangs leaning up here on the gate like we see today, and you got a rival gang that's in a car. We got 2,600 students going westbound on 103rd, and he's trying to shoot one guy that's running. How many kids would get shot?
Stand by for about another 5 minutes, and then we're going to lock up both east, west, and west gates.
I feel safe. I feel safe because I grew up here. I used to gangbang here. We picked on them. Robbed them. I guess that's a gang member mentality, you know, to always let the people know that this is my turf, you know, and you can't come here, you know, so then they looking for stuff to take from them, you know, just to let them know next time when you see me, you know, I'm the man, you know, I'm the big man.
East gate is already locked.
See how the kids done thinned out now? And see that group that was across the street? They moving on. They moving.
Hi, my name is Stereo Mike.
Producer Queen of Kim talked to Pastor Michael Cummings at Jordan High School in Watts, California.
Yeah, we got free tickets to the Brand Van concert happening this Monday night at the Pacific Palisades.
Growing Old in East L.A. was produced by David Greenberger with Barbara Price and Jay Allison. Music by Louis Perez and David Hidalgo of Los Lobos. You are hearing voices in the City of Angels.
Beautiful day.
More from Tom Russell's Hot Walker coming up. First, a musical break. Raise your glasses. We're going drinking in L.A. with Brand Van 3000.
What do you think? Time.
He's alive. Alive.
I woke up again this morning with the sun in my eyes. When Mike came over with a script surprise. A mafioso story with a twist. A two-wall fool, Julie Numa, here to get your ass out of bed. He said, I'll explain it on the way.
We did nothing, absolutely nothing that day. And I said, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at 26? I got the fever for the flavor, the payback for the labor. Still I need a fix.
Yeah, I'm with it. And the girls on the bus kept on laughing at us as we rode around town down to Venice again. Firing out the G-Funk, sipping on juice and gin. Just me and a friend, feeling kinda groovy, working on a movie.
Yeah, right!
But we did nothing, absolutely buckets that day. And I'll say, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at 26?
With my mind on my money and my money.
See them all bitching by the bar, above the fine line between the rich and the poor. They might turn to me and say, what you think we got done, son? We found the conclusion.
Bukowski died in 1994. Little Jack Horton died June 17th, 2004, 10 years later, in Gibson Town, Florida. Charles Bukowski, the passing of an American poet, an American legend, an American voice, post office worker, crank, outsider, drunk, madman, American, and a poet. Authentic voice in a wasted land. Little Jack Horton, movie actor, stuntman, circus clown, freak poet, and hot walker. An authentic voice flying above the midway of America. two voices closed down forever. And I realized it was all gone. It was over. The old LA, the literature of the legacies, the metallic sounds of great lost American music blasting out of cheap little speakers, blasting out of car speakers and cantinas on the border, all the old jazz, hardcore country western, the wild American metallic sound, and all those old stories. Bukowski and little Jack Horton stealing a train engine. And those blind Jesus singers in Pershing Square, the Sisters of Mercy. I can still hear them. I can still hear them. I can still hear them.
From my own thoughts and mind. America. I always thought it was our America, as much as anybody else's, you know. Circus people and carnival freaks, prisoners and music makers, musicians, troubadours, minstrels, hobos, poets, and such. We can't let the goddamn country go down to politicians and corporate madmen and college professors and media people. Run it over and ruin it all. It's ours. It's our goddamn country. We built the Midway, didn't we? And we make the music that goes on the Midway, from sea to shining goddamn sea. You know, goddammit, Ronald Reagan dies recently and they fly the flag half-mast. Well, did they fly it half-mast for Ray Charles? Did they fly it half-mast for Johnny Cash? Declare a national holiday? Yet these people like, you know, Ray Charles, Johnny Cash, Hank Williams, these people moved and changed the daily lives of more people than these goddamn politicians, who are just grifters and scum. We wouldn't even let them in the goddamn Midway. So let's now praise the real American heroes, the ones with the heart, soul, and character who changed things for the good here. And leave the goddamn politicians out of it, from sea to shining goddamn sea. One nation under God, and Johnny Cash, Hank Williams, and Ray Charles, goddammit. Little Jack Horton, half drunk on some very bad wine, saying, so long, partner, and we'll see you on the Midway.
Spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain. Thank you.
she grew up with the children of the stars in the Hollywood Hills and the Boulevard. Her parents threw big parties. Everyone was there. They hung out with folks like Dennis Hopper and Bob Seger and Sonny and Cher. But she feels safe now in this bar on Fairfax. And from the stage I can tell that she can't let go and she can't relax. And just before she hangs her head to cry, I sing to her a lullaby. But she still lives with her mom outside the city, down that street about a half a mile. And all her friends tell her she's so pretty, but she'd be a whole lot prettier if she smiled once in a while. Even her smile looks like a frown. She's seen her share of devils in this angel town.
Everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye.
So sure about this place. It's hard to play a gig in this town, keep a straight face. It seems like everybody's got a plan. It's kinda like Nashville with a tan.
Everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye. Everything's gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye.
John Mullen's Lullaby off his Soul's Core. Tom Russell's Hot Walker is on High Tone Records, and David Greenberger's work is at DuplexPlanet.com. I'm Barrett Golding. There's links to everything you heard at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.